Got a bad bitch on me.
What?
Got a bad bitch on me.
She
D T F.
She tell me she
D T F.
I heard she
D T F.
What?
And you ain't hanging with the team if you ain't down to fuck.
Okay. Well, Lil Mama.
Welcome to DTF, the Daryl Timmery Fun Hour, the universe's greatest sex education comedy, sometimes game show, currently podcast. In the universe. The universe is best in the universe. I am your resident sexuality educator, Dr. Timmery, and I just tried a thing and it didn't work out, and I won't do it again. Who are you?
And I am the improv teacher who tells you that every mistake is perfect and you should forgive yourself.
Okay.
Daryl Charles.
Thank you. I was like, we've
no problem. I forgive myself. One of the first things I learned in improv.
Okay. Because, like, we've been doing this for 8 years and I always said it the same way. And I'm like, let's try this. And I'm like, did not think this through. It
sounded great to me.
All right. Well, thanks. I appreciate your support.
The universe is greatest thing in the universe. Damn right.
Welcome to the Tautology podcast. We have an episode full of news, of specifically fucking news. So,
true.
Yeah. Should we just get right into it?
I guess. Yeah. Well, we did a Matrix banter last time. What's the new thing?
What is the new thing? I guess I saw Dune, and I need everyone to go see Dune so that there's a whole trilogy.
It's that good?
So I went in with, like, no expectations and no particular, like, knowledge of Dune. I'm familiar with the concept of, like, the book, and I know about the Lynch one. And in college, I dated somebody who was obsessed with the Lynch one, and that actually scared me away from watching it because of the way that it had been talked about. So I went in with, like, completely blank slate, but I trust Denis Villeneuve, and was blown away, was absolutely so into it. The fashion alone was enough to bring me back. I'm gonna see it in theater a second time. Like,
oh wow.
Yeah, I felt like what people must have felt like seeing Star Wars in like 77, being like, whoa,
what a world.
Yeah.
World
building. Yeah. So
all I know is that it was a movie that was done a while ago, and it was pretty much horrible, but weird, and so it became a cult classic. That's all I know about Dune.
Yeah, so. I think for some people it'll probably be too difficult to follow. Understandably, I was like, I'm not sure I'm catching everything, but that's part of why I want to go see it a second time. But the problem with the Lynch one, I think, was that they tried to fit too much into a movie, and like movies based on books are rarely good at capturing the book if they try to do the entire book.
Right, yeah.
You can't, like, it doesn't take 2 hours to read a book most of the time, so why would it be possible to do a movie of it?
Yeah.
That's why you gotta, like, split them up into, like, a season of a show or something.
Right, yeah, and people are starting to realize that, like, yeah, television's the writer's medium, so if you're gonna take a book and translate it, that television's probably the way. But yeah, there's going to be something missing in the translation.
Yeah. Well, this
I used to for years, actually, I took a class in high school, but then for years after that I would read a Stephen King book and then watch the movie.
Yeah.
Just for fun. And man, some of those movies stunk.
Yeah. Like, notoriously bad. Like,
yeah.
The only one that I liked was the one that Stephen King hated. So, like, The Shining.
The Shining?
Yeah.
Right. Sure. I really like that book, but I also like the Kubrick movie, and I watched the TV movie that's supposed to be more based on the book, but that was years ago. I don't remember what that TV movie was. It was like one of the dads from Wings or
something.
Oh my
god, it was.
Was playing Jack
Torrance. Yeah, it was. It was not Tim Daly. It was the other guy from Wings. Yeah.
Yeah, the other guy from Wings.
Yeah,
and, he played Jack Torrance. Now I don't remember who played his wife or his son.
No idea, man.
But I really did like Dr. Sleep. I watched movie, and I didn't read the book, but I did like Dr. Sleep.
The one of the villains from Dr. Sleep is actually in Dune too.
Ooh.
Tying it all together.
The Hat Lady?
Yeah.
Or the old guy? Oh, the Hat Lady.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Because the whole time I was like, wait a minute.
I don't trust you for reasons that this movie isn't giving me.
But I'm also very, very, very here for your fashion. So, yeah. Okay.
Hell yeah.
So that's my my movie recommendation of the week on this sex podcast. Is that this movie is full of beautiful people and lots of violence. So.
Is there any sex? Or is it just violence?
I don't recall any sex.
Okay, so it's PG-13. Cool, 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 cool.
I mean, the only sex thing that stands out is somebody gets called a concubine. And for some reason, I like that.
Sure. Concubine's a fun word.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, concubine's a fun word. We need to shift from that. Instead of calling somebody a side piece or your side john,
yeah,
you just call them your concubine.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But that does imply an ownership, which
oh yeah,
is not inherent in the side piece thing.
We could just take the ownership part out. It's like you're each other's concubines.
Right, right. Our relationship's concubinous.
Yeah. Oh.
That's how you put that. Yeah.
Concubisexual. Yeah. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah.
There we go. Okay. Well, that seems like we've belabored that enough. We can go into the fucking news. All right. Well, here we are at the fucking news.
Wow.
Yeah. The first story is fucking delightful. And this has to do with the Vienna Tourism Board has started an account on OnlyFans because it is the only social network that permits depictions of nudity. And so many of their art museums and galleries feature art that has nudity. So in a in a genius move, they have come up with a workaround.
Yeah, they could not get their advertisements placed on any of the other social medias, you know, like that one that is very good at fomenting division in America, but apparently even better at keeping titties off.
Phenomenally
yeah, they,
bad. Like, one time I was on, I've been thrown in Facebook jail like a million times, and rarely is it something where I actually am like, oh yeah, you got me. Because like sometimes it's like, one of them was like for a Halloween message, it was someone laying flat and they had an erection and they put like a little handkerchief over the erection that made it look like a ghost. And I got thrown in jail for that. You couldn't see the actual penis itself. I've gotten thrown in for art nudes before. I got thrown in Facebook jail for wearing a bodysuit that made it look like I was naked, and I put on the caption, "Do not report this. This is not actual nudity." And I still got thrown in.
So, and you still got flagged.
Yep, yep.
Don't you tell me what to do. This is America.
Well.
And in Vienna, apparently, I don't know much about Vienna, but apparently they just got nudes everywhere. There's just a collection of titties and butts.
Well, I mean, this is just museums in general. It's like a lot of art, because what people want to look at is you know, bodies of other people.
Nude figures, yeah.
We love looking
like
at that stuff.
All those, yeah, like David and like all those naked statues. It's like, it wasn't like the appreciation of the form. People like to be titillated. If there's one constant about human beings, it's that we enjoy putting our pieces in other people's pieces. We have very much fun with that. None of that was proper English.
Yeah.
Because you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, or like, even just looking at other people's pieces. Like,
you're right. That's exactly.
So some examples of people who've been censored, museums, like the Albertina Museum had a TikTok account that was suspended and then blocked for showing a Japanese photographer's art. It had like an obscured female breast, and like the museum had to start a whole new account. There was a Peter Paul Rubens painting that violated some community standards that got a museum taken down. I remember a Philadelphia art museum's Facebook page was taken down because they had, it wasn't even like a photo and it didn't even depict sex, but it was like a woman licking an ice cream in such a way that they decided it was pornographic.
Which is fantastic. I just, you know, there's shout out. I hope that person is still working at Facebook. You know, like, I hope that person is still gainfully employed. Because, like, I can't imagine having a job involving computers when someone licking an ice cream cone gets you dick hard. I can't even imagine. Like, oh my God, how do you even do work then? Like, if that's gonna set you off, then the F in Facebook is a little too tawdry, you know? Like,
yeah. I mean, some of the things are like, it's algorithms, right? It's like not even picked up by a person, because like the thing that people are most likely to actually report is like violence or hate speech. But what is most likely to get taken down is that which like the computer can pick up on, because it's like, this looks like an awful lot of skin. Something like that. So even though that one that got the Philadelphia Art Museum's page taken down didn't have any nudity, it must have just like done the same thing that like we've talked about before, like where people would take porn and then like cover it up with something, but it would still get caught in the machine learning algorithms. Man,
that's like some of my favorite Twitter wormholes to fall down.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the name of that account was. It was a Tumblr for a while, and then they had a Twitter for a while. This is, we're talking years ago, but they would like draw badly on purpose, but they would draw on stills from adult films and would make the person be eating a very large hot dog or pouring water into a river. It was just, yeah, just hilarious.
I liked the riding the rocking horse.
Right.
Yeah. You know, this is cute.
Yeah. Riding a rocking horse is like two people sharing an ice cream cone while the person who just gave it to him looks like he's just very happy with their purchase. It's great.
Yeah.
It's a great use of the internet, and probably started by that person who made the algorithm that got upset over ice cream.
But it's so funny, because now the only place you can go for it is, of course, either Twitter or, like, straight up OnlyFans. Like, and this is funny, because it wasn't that long ago that OnlyFans was like, actually, we're going to take off all the porn, too.
They really were.
They really were gonna. And then that was probably the fastest 180 I have seen in a company.
Yeah, pretty funny. Yeah. Because when they, I mean, you know, a bunch of people threatened to leave when they stopped doing the kickback thing. And I felt like that backlash was greater, but whatever.
Yeah, it's just so confusing. Like, how is anybody supposed to operate as a business anymore when the rules of engagement just keep constantly changing in this way? And there's like, the other thing is like, so much of this is being done out of fear of like FOSTA SESTA, because like Facebook just doesn't want to be held responsible. But the thing is like, FOSTA SESTA, since it's been passed, has only actually been utilized like once or twice. So they're basically just like choosing to be conservative. They don't have to be doing this. And like, they're also not following their own standards. Like, they say that art nudes should count. But like, even an example, another one. So we're reading this article from The Guardian about the Vienna Museum. In 2018... the National Natural History Museum had a photograph of the Venus of Willendorf figuring, which is not really nudity. It's a sculpture, right? That's like...
Right.
I guess it's a human form, but it was deemed pornographic by Facebook, and then it was like removed. So that, hence this decision to make this move. But it's just like, you guys, your rules specifically say that that is okay. So why does this keep happening?
Pieces of art meant for, not for titillation, but just as, you know, a historical record or something like that, that's been in their bylaws for like since the beginning. Yeah. And, you know, it's tough when people are just like, well, just follow your own rules. It's tough when there are other people just like, what I really need you to do is punish people who enjoy sex.
Yeah. Yeah, well, so everybody should go support a bunch of people on all of the sites, not just OnlyFans, but if you want to go to Vienna's OnlyFans profile, the subscribers are going to get a Vienna City card or an admission ticket to see the artworks in person. So
that's also true, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, if you were planning a trip to Vienna.
And that's the other part. They were saying that, like, you know, no one is going to Vienna. You know, not just because of 2020, but also because of 2020. That, like, yeah, tourism is down, and so they need people to come to Vienna. And what's the best way to sell that? Hey, there's a bunch of genitals in our museums, dog. So, hey, at least we're getting that word out.
So, one day when we can go back to traveling internationally, let's head to Vienna.
Yeah.
I've never been to Austria.
What country is that in?
Austria.
It's Austria?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I've been to a fair number of places nearby, like Czech Republic, Hungary, you know, France, Spain, etc., but somehow never made it to Austria. I've never made it to Germany either, and that seems to be
I've been to Germany as a spot. Kid. I'm not very interested in Europe as a traveler.
That's fair.
Just me personally. But, you know, I've been to a couple places, but Greece, I think, is the other European place I've been. Yeah, Greece and Athens specifically. And I don't even remember what city it was in when I went to Germany because we were at an army base.
Oh.
So, yeah. But we did get to, like, go to, like, one of the public pools, and that was the first time I just saw public nudity.
Oh.
And I was, like, 11 or 10 and had to quickly learn to control myself.
So, like, the public pools there are, like, clothing optional?
Yeah. Huh. And the one that I went to had, like, you know, summertime, and there was, like, a lawn that was, like, kind of private. Like, it was, like, big hedges, and the hedges were, you know, probably, like, I don't know, 5 feet tall, 6 feet tall, and they surrounded, like, just a rectangle of grass, and on that rectangle was a bunch of nude people sunning. They were just, you know, out in the sun, and it was, like, you know, a few feet from the pool, but it was, like, its own little area, but, you know, as I think you could, it was, you could walk by it on the way back from the bathroom. So, like, I went and changed, and on my way back, I was like, everybody here is naked. What the fuck? And then you get to the... And then it's like, stop staring, Daryl. And then when you get to the pool, then the other thing that I saw was, like kids under five, completely nude. Like, kids were just nude, jumping in and out the water, running, chasing each other. It was just like, yeah, I mean, I guess you just save money on... on swimwear.
Okay, so I have concerns about that because little kids just sort of like pee randomly.
That's also true. And, you know, that's also true. But I just, that was what I saw in the 90s when I went there.
I don't know. Now I gotta go check this out because, like, also the world has just gotten generally conservative since then.
Right. And yeah, who knows if that's the way it is.
Yeah, like Amsterdam was so notoriously like, the red light district, blah, blah, blah. And now they're like, you know what? We would prefer the red light district not be any of the things that you associate it with.
Yeah, they tried to. It's the same thing they did with, like, Times Square.
Yeah.
Times Square used to be a wonderful cesspool. And shout out to Rudy Giuliani, America's mayor. He cleaned up Times Square by bringing M&Ms and putting the homeless and destitute on buses outside of the city. So, you know, just a overall good person.
Wow. See, just Lion King
picking
on
up the homeless in the middle of the night and just putting them on a bus away. You know.
Wow. Welcome to DTF, where it turns
welcome
out.
Welcome to DTF.
Capitalism was the villain all along.
No, this time it was Rudy Giuliani.
Specifically, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Powered by capitalism, but
yeah.
While we are on the museum topic, one of the things we're going to talk about is my article in the Philly Weekly this week, as of this recording, has to do with an exhibit that's at the Mutter Museum in Philadelphia. Actually, the second part of it is actually at the Center for Architecture and Design. So it's a multiple location exhibit, and it's also a curricula and a bunch of community programs, and it's much more than just an exhibit, but it is called Designing really Motherhood, cool. And it is currently, it was originally scheduled, I think, through the end of the year, but now it's been expanded to go into spring of 2022, but you should still go see it. sooner rather than later, but it has to do with design objects related to pregnancy, childbirth, breastfeeding, etc. So you can, it's really only one room because these objects are not super big. Because they
right,
go,
yeah, I mean, if they have to fit in a person yeah. or they're to help get a person when they're their tiniest
yeah.
out, yeah, it's not going to be the size, it's not like the first computer that was the size of a room.
Yeah, it's like the opposite of that. So the yeah, the yeah. whole thing is basically like one room, it's like the size of my living room, basically, and you can see a mixture of things. There's like examples of IUDs from like the 1930s to the modern era. You can see an example of a specula that was made in the 19th century to replicate one that would have been used in the first century, like Pompeii. And then you can see a more modern specula that takes into consideration the fact that like people with vulvas experience sensations, including pain.
Yeah, right, yeah, exactly. Like the first one made out of sandpaper. They just needed a grip. They have since moved to smoother things.
Yeah, so if people are not familiar with what a speculum is, which is understandable because, like, I think the really big takeaway from this whole exhibit is, like, I don't think most people have seen a lot of these things unless they already were working in, like, the field of, like, midwifery. But, a speculum is a thing that is used to open up an orifice to examine it. And one of the most common reasons that someone would need one is to open up a vaginal canal. And so the history of them is really bad and problematic. The history of gynecology, pretty horrible. And a lot of
history of gynecology is pretty tough.
It's a lot of doing things on non-consenting, often enslaved people. And they are not going to be, like, given a bunch of anesthetics beforehand. So
yeah, it's a lot of vivisection. People have a great capacity for evil. I think that's how it goes. I did not know that IUDs were around in the 30s.
Yeah, IUDs are actually really ancient. So originally, it wasn't like the kind of things we have now that are small and fantastic. People have been like stuffing things in bodies to prevent pregnancy for thousands of years. And like some of the things that people would use before, like in there's writings about in ancient Egypt, like using like crocodile dung.
I've heard that. That I heard before.
Yeah, just,
yeah, a little bit of crocodile. I mean, you know.
Yeah, the process of collecting that and then inserting it.
It's just who, at some point, there was somebody that went, They fell for it? She really put that? Wow. Okay.
People have been desperately trying to limit the number of kids they have.
Yes.
For a long time. Yeah. So the sort of modern idea of an IUD has been around for, yeah, like a little over 100 years. And the first ones were very scary looking, and a lot of them were metal, and the like if they had a string coming out of them, they were made out of things that were much more dangerous than the ones now. So like if bacteria came into the vagina, perhaps from like a really common STI, you know, like a chlamydia, gonorrhea, it could travel up those strings, up that metal, into the uterus and then cause pelvic inflammatory disease. So there's a lot of reasons to be fearful of IUDs, and a lot of that has been addressed through design since then. But I think one of the big takeaways from this whole exhibit is that, like, you have to, A, value and center the comfort of the people upon whom these things are being used, but also, you know, care about any of this at all. And so much of the history of childbearing was occluded from public view and really not discussed, and then it was medicalized. Like even just the positions that we put someone in when they're giving birth are very much for the physician's ease,
right?
And like the use of, you know, cutting the perineum in an episiotomy, that has a lot more to do with the physician than it does to do with the person who's having the baby. So but the thing about this exhibit was, what I really, really, really want people to take away if they're going to go to it. When you walk in the door, there is a sign that has a, you know, whenever you enter an exhibit, it's like, this is the this room. And then there's a bunch of stuff and you may or may not read it. And at the bottom of it is a QR code. And because it is not 2014, I don't scan every QR code I see anymore.
It's not like, ooh, it's one of those things. Where's my phone?
It's going to take me to a website.
Let me flip it open.
Yeah, so if you
close this game of Snake and check this QR code out. Have you heard about it? Did you download the app?
Oh, my God. Yeah, you needed an app. You used to need an app. Yeah. You needed a QR code reader. But yeah, if you scan that QR code, it'll take you to a guide to all of the exhibits that you actually can't find if you just go to the website. At least that I couldn't find it, if you just go to the website for the exhibit. And there's also a physical copy of a gallery guide that you could pick up and walk around with it, and it'll explain what all the objects are. But if you don't do that, there's not necessarily a lot of explanation for what the things are. So, for instance, there was a big glass case full of pessaries, and I was there with our intrepid editor and producer, Flirt Vonnegut, and he was like, tell me what I'm looking at here. So, you know, and I'd stand there and I go like, you know what, honestly, I think I need to look this up because I don't know if I know what exactly this is all about, because I am not super well versed in childbirth stuff. So pessaries are a thing that's like inserted into the vagina to like support the organs from prolapse. And in reading the museum guide, it's like 50% of people who are over 50 and have a vagina have pelvic floor prolapse. This is like a problem that affects a lot of people. And yet, despite that, I don't remember learning anything about pessaries in the many years I was in sex school. So, you know, like, this exhibit was new information for me, the sex doctor. Right. So I highly recommend using the museum guide.
And I have to highly recommend using museums, especially the Mutter Museum. It's so much fun. Also horrifying in a lot of fun ways.
What are your favorites?
My favorite part is, I bring it up all the time, there is a board that is like a pictograph thing of all of the things that can happen to a human eye.
What?
Yeah, it was like in a corner. I went with my good friend John Colby and we looked at it and ooh boy, man, like all of the things. And it's in color, and you know, it's like a model. But like, it'd be like, one, a regular eye. Two, an eye with conjunctivitis. Three, an eye with a wooden, there was one with just a piece of wood in the middle of it.
No.
Like, the level of, like, body horror feelings that you got when looking at that board is just an experience I want everyone to have.
Wow.
Yeah. And like, you know, they have, I saw the soap lady there. They have a bunch of, you know, malformed human beings in jars and stuff. There's a lot of weird science, but really,
the giant colon.
It is a giant colon. That's right. They have to like fill it with like paper mache or whatever so it keeps its shape.
But, it's like, yeah. My recollection, this may be wrong, but my recollection was that it was like bigger than I am.
Yeah, it's a pretty big colon. It was a pretty big colon. But then they have like the tallest person, like I don't think it's their actual body.
There's lots of skeletons though.
I think it's a model. But there are tons of skeletons, yeah.
Yeah.
Lots super of cool. Right schools. In Center City.
Yeah.
Just a good time every time.
Yeah, and it's also got a cool outdoor space. I've either never been there when the weather was good for that, or I don't know, I'd never checked out before, but there's like a self-guided tour of all these weird plants outside too.
Oh
yeah,
I don't think I knew that.
And a fun exhibit on the 1918 flu epidemic for reasons that very, very relevant. So
I mean, and that's the thing, it's always, and you know, it's a museum, so there are different exhibits. It's, you know, go if you haven't been for a while. They really do a wonderful job of curation. And you know, on the back of that note, please, you know, read more.
Well, you're already doing yourself a solid by listening to a podcast that is focused on information.
Exactly. Yes. And so you're doing a great job.
You're doing great.
But you know, take your dumbest friend to a museum. You want to know how you can change the world? Take the stupidest person you know to the museum.
Oh, I don't know if that's a good idea.
Why?
I don't trust them in the museum.
Oh, I mean, you know, the museums usually have everything locked down. The worst thing they can do is, like, poop on the floor. But, like, you know.
Okay.
You know, but that's, you know, they're not going to really be able to touch stuff. But just bring the dumbest person you know to a museum. And maybe you have to read to them. Maybe you just, you take extra long so you don't have to tip off that you know they can't read. You just take a long time to look at stuff. And you'd be like, I'm just noticing the feathers on the back of that osprey's thing. Is that what that word is? And then also the beak structure. And, you know, then they learned what an osprey is. You know, like, I have no idea if that's even a bird. So I am also stupid. I'm not saying this from some, like, high and mighty academic thing. Just look, there are a lot of stupid people in the world,
and it includes us.
You probably aren't one of them. Thank you for listening.
Yeah,
but it's with great power.
And also, just know that if Daryl ever invites you to a museum,
hey,
this is how he's letting you know he thinks you're stupid.
Yeah, or unless you are a friend of mine and you're like, I want to go see a cool thing in Philly. Like, what should I go do? I will take you to Tony Luke's, and then I will take you to the Mutter Museum. Those are the quickest ways that I know how to tell someone about Philadelphia.
We're having a good time checking out the Soap Lady.
Yeah, it's like, and the Rocky Steps are in that general direction. Now let's go look at these eyeballs.
Yeah, you can see a picture of the Rocky Steps. It's fine.
Fine.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Fine. It's fine.
It's totally fine.
All right. Well, so yeah, everybody should check out this Designing Motherhood exhibit. Again, it's at the Mutter, and then there's another second half of it at the Center for Architecture and Design. So it's,
where's that? Is that also
in that's also in Philly. It's on I think Arch Street, like maybe around like 10th. I've been there as well. It's a lovely space. I actually gave a talk there one time. And I'm sure I'm sure that the objects there are totally different too. So you could hit up both. Sure.
Yeah, I think it's one of those. There are a number of those buildings on like Ben Franklin Parkway that are like really nice looking, but there is nothing telling you what's on the inside of it. It's just a nice looking building. And then you find out like, oh no, that's a museum that's dedicated to one very specific thing.
Yeah, like the Rodin Museum.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. There's a bunch of great museums up there. Yeah. And it's, I wish that they were all free. Like, you know, the Smithsonian, yeah, I think is free, right? Like you
can. The Smithsonian is free, but I knew when I went to the National African American History Museum, I think that's what it is, yeah, the Obama one,
yeah,
the Blacksonian, it was free, but you still, it was so they still ticketed it because so many people wanted to go.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was like a backlist of things, but then it was funny because it was a Native American museum. And when I went to go to the Blacksonian, they were like, you can come in here, ain't nobody, nothing, all right, whatever.
Oh, well, it was also brand new too, because when we went to that, sure, it was like brand, yeah, new, and y'all only, yeah, got tickets because you're like, I don't know, supporters or something, right?
Yeah, yeah, we've donated money, so we were on the list of you can get tickets easier if you gave them some money. Yeah. We also got the they released a hip hop compendium that has like a bunch of CDs just chronicling the history of hip hop, which is neat.
That is
it's
cool.
Nice and silver, and it's got a big book full of pictures.
I like that. Yeah. Also, yeah, Designing cool. Motherhood is also a book, too, as well. And it was in the gift shop right next to The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways you can experience this exhibit. So, like, if you're not in Philly or able to, you know, come here, you can definitely still find the book about it as well. So.
Yeah.
I recommend it.
And, you know, understanding history is a great way to be able to critically analyze the present and make plans for the future.
That sounds like a fantastic segue to our next piece of fucking news, Daryl.
That's what I'm here for, baby.
Ah! Whew. All right. So this one's going to be rough. Okay. We never give trigger warnings just because, like, we never know, you know, what is going to impact one person or another. This is not a fun one, though. So Liberty University, which was founded by evangelist Jerry Falwell, noted terrible person. It is a school. It's just a university. And I would not go there for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is I wouldn't want to be around the people that would want to go there. And I don't imagine that they will even acknowledge that dinosaurs exist. But despite that, people who go there deserve to be safe. And then if anything happens to them, they should be able to seek restorative justice and accountability for those who have harmed them. And what we are learning is that that's not the case.
I just love how you have to, you're like, listen, these are garbage people. However, which, you know, I mean, yes, there is something to be said about trying to live a pure and chaste life and what that says about how you're going to deal with the pressures of regular, normal, everyday life. But also, like, college is expensive, and a lot of times your parents are the ones paying for it, or you're taking out loans. So it may not always just be you. You might have just come from bad stock who put stock in Liberty University. Yeah. But like you said, it doesn't matter if you're a good person or not. You don't deserve to be assaulted.
Yes. So what we found out today as of you know, this recording, ProPublica, which is a phenomenal organization that it's just like they always have the paperwork to back up what they're saying.
They come with the facts.
Yes. So they spoke to a number of Liberty University students who were sexually assaulted, usually by other students, and when they went forward to the university about it, in fact,
female students, we need to make sure we mention.
There is a, you know, like Title IX stuff up at the university because it's still, you know, an accredited university somehow.
Well, you have to have that, and because they also said they got like $800 million in aid because of their adherence to Title IX.
Yeah, so Title IX is supposed to make things more gender equitable, and so they have like signage up that says like "Speak up, Title IX. If you see something wrong, say something right." And they, of course, tie in a religious facet to it, so they're like Proverbs 31:8: "Speak up for those who can't speak for themselves, for the rights of all who need an advocate." But when students actually go forward and they bring this stuff up to their RA or bring this stuff up to a higher up, they keep getting told to not report it, or they are being threatened, or the fact that, like,
you know, you'll get in more trouble for this than I will.
Yes. And like,
yeah,
a lot of the situations are unfortunately the, you know, the same reason that sexual assault is difficult for a lot of college campuses is that drinking is involved, and that makes everything more complicated. And like,
right,
just because you're drunk doesn't mean that you are asking for literally anything to happen to you. But right. Liberty University is of the opinion that violating the student code of conduct by drinking and by consorting with the opposite sex just sort of opens you up to like whatever. And so these survivors are like not getting support, and one in particular saved like pictures of like the bruises and all of the things that were on her body. Like there's a list of bruising to the chest and the arms and the breast
neck.
And
yeah,
there's photos. I didn't open it up, but they are on here. And
it's photos of bruises. I looked at them. You know, it's photos of bruises.
Yeah. And there's like lacerations and stuff like that, a bruised lip.
Yeah.
And she submitted those things into evidence with the equity office, and they got rid of them because they said they were too explicit.
Yeah, when before they, you know, finalized their investigation, they said, "Hey, you can read a copy of it, you know, of our investigation," which I think any place should do. And when she looked at it, she was like, "All of my pictures are gone. What the hell?" And they were like, "Yeah, they were too graphic." And mind you, it's not that I wasn't looking for titillation, but these pictures are very not titillating. It's just of a neck or a lip, or like you can see shoulders. The person has a shirt on, but they're just bruises on their chest, which, you know, makes you wonder how would those bruises occur? There's a whole host of reasons why those bruises would occur, but what should have happened is the two people involved in the interaction should be made to answer for why those bruises showed up.
Yeah.
But the university was not with that.
And the response that the university had to this particular student was that if they were moving the case forward to a final decision, she would need to sign a document acknowledging that she could be found to have violated the university's code of conduct, including the ban on drinking and being in a state of undress with a member of the opposite sex, which is like, she didn't do the undressing.
Right.
Guys. So, and
she does not remember any of that stuff. Yeah. It's,
Yeah. And then there's,
'cause Liberty University has the purity code, or Liberty Code, I think is what it's called. So, aside from, you know, just the laws of the university, everyone ascribes to these very puritanical ideals of how to interact. And that's usually the first thing in, it was multiple women interviewed for this article who said that their violations of the code were the first things brought up when they said, hey, I need to report an assault.
Yes. There's another student who talked about in the fall of 2013, she went to, get this, one of the university's mental health counselors who said that if she wanted to go forward on this, that she would have to sign a victim notice that would possibly mean that she would be in trouble for breaking the Liberty Way if she chose to move forward, which would mean she would lose her scholarship too.
Or be fined.
Yeah. Yeah, so
and
like
it's like, it's like a $300 fine, and if you don't give them the money for being assaulted, they will not release your transcripts. Man, college is pulling that transcript shit. Ooh, boy.
Like that is such a scam in general, just like it's a general thing, like because I've just heard of people.
Yeah, you know, if you've been to college, you know that. Ooh,
you'd be like, how much more money do you need from me?
Give me my pieces of paper, you fucking monsters.
And somebody that I follow on Twitter the other day was like, so I graduated and now I'm actually on the faculty, but I had to pay them this money to get the transcripts so that I could work for the same university.
Yo, I mean, for real, yo, the bursar's office needs to be brought up by The Hague for the crimes that they do to very young people and also very old people. I mean, it's just adult education, but man, it's a racket.
Yeah. So,
and that's, yeah.
So to go back to this like Liberty University thing, I think one of the things that like you and I were talking about before and we want to like talk about is like, so there is this part of me that's like, is there any part of me that is less concerned with these victims because they are people that probably wouldn't like me and would probably judge me and like all of that? Well, maybe, but like again, still like they're still people and right. Like they still have bodily autonomy and total rights, and like the whole idea that anybody like that because you get drunk, because you go to a place that you shouldn't have gone to, that these justifications, these ways that we try to rationalize horrible things being done, not just happening, but being done to other people because we want to feel safer by being like, well, as long as I walk this straight and narrow path, then like nothing bad will happen to me or my loved ones, which is just not true.
Nope.
And it's, you know, this is also part of like the purity culture shit in general, where the places that are most likely to have people convinced that sex is bad when it's consensual are gonna absolutely, you know, fill you with shame around sex that you didn't even really consent to. So how many stories about people's religious upbringings made them not want to come forward about sexual abuse because they felt that they had sinned?
Right. And it's like, you know, the other part of that purity culture is putting all of the onus of sexual activity on the women. Because I read this article and said to myself, man, if I was a person who really was jonesing to sexually assault someone, Liberty University sounds like a perfect place to get my education. And, you know, it's a terrible sentence to ever have to say, hypothetically or not, right? You know, if word of this was out and amongst the women who were being assaulted, just imagine the messages that these alleged assaulters were getting, right? You know, it's really sucks that many religions are seemingly inextricably tied to sexual abuse.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to draw any conclusions, but I'm just saying, it's a real shame.
Well, I think it's like any religion where they tell you that your body doesn't belong to you ultimately, right? Mm-hmm. That the idea is that you belong to something else. And even if, like, you're raised to believe that that something else loves you and, you know, would never harm you and all those kind of things, it still requires that I, the believer, think that I am ultimately not in charge of this and, like, that I can commit a sin. I can do a wrongdoing that doesn't actually hurt anyone. Like, literally the idea that, like, someone can tell me how I can touch my own stuff, you know, in the privacy of my own room, you know? Like, the idea that
well,
that
could
really
be... really private. There's always at least two beings there.
Exactly, yeah. Right?
One's, you know, just big into voyeurism, but we're not supposed to talk about that. That's okay.
Yeah, like, it's perfectly fine that Jesus is watching you masturbate. That's his fucking right to do. Maybe God should learn something about privacy. And respecting boundaries, you know? Like,
you know? But, you know, I've been in the middle of masturbation, and I was like, given what I'm doing and what I'm looking at, Jesus ain't in the building, dog. I'm pretty sure he decided to walk around the block a couple times while I was in the midst of it. You know, I'm sitting there drooling on myself. It wouldn't be the sort of thing that any deity would want to see. Buddha would have been like, let me go get something to eat. This is a lot. This is a lot. He has a special robe. Oh my God. Let me go. I'll be back. I'm going to come back in the morning. So.
But this is
if you learn anything from this, masturbation is a godless pursuit.
And like that, but that's not even what every religion says either. Like,
no, because no, it isn't.
There's not a unanimous consensus on this. There are just specific, and you can also have a super shame-filled upbringing that doesn't have religion involved either, too.
Very true.
You know, like, this is not exclusive to that. It's just that when religion is involved, it's much easier to get people to internalize these messages, because if the source of the authority is a person, like if it's just that your mom and dad said no or whatever, the teacher said no, when that person's out of the room, you do whatever. Right. But if the idea is the authority figure is never out of the room and even knows what's in your brain, then
you should feel bad about those thoughts.
Yeah, then it allows us to like internalize whatever messages that person wants us to hold. And shame is such a powerful one. It's so paralyzing.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I do remember like I was in Catholic school until the third grade, and I really do remember the lesson of original sin, and like how immediately I was like, oh, okay, cool, I have something to be sorry about. Like it was just like, like oh yeah, everybody's bad. Cool. I'm gonna go on with my day and pray about it at night.
The so many things that are like. I remember from childhood and religion are like deeply messed up. I remember visiting cousins who are part of like another religion than mine and them telling me just like as a fact that I was going to hell because I was a different type of Christian than they were, you know, like I was raised Catholic and they were a different one. And so it was just as a fact, I'm going to hell. And I was just like, they're so certain about this.
Yeah, I was my mom found cigarettes, actually beedies, and so the way that I was punished was with the good word, and so I ended up having to go to church, and it actually took. I was very into it in high school, and one of my very good friends, one of my bestest friends, told me because she was into Wicca because of the craft. The craft was the best calling card for a religion. Harry Potter has nothing on the craft. But anyway, she was a craft Wiccan, similar to how many people are Malcolm X, the Spike Lee movie Muslims. She was like, Darren, remember that time you told me I was going to hell? I was like, whoa, what? She's like, you said it in no uncertain terms. You're like, going to hell. That's rough. But good. At least I still, even, you know, adolescent-minded Daryl was like, I'll still be your friend, you heathen.
Gee golly.
You know, at least I can be proud of myself to be like, you're going to hell, but that doesn't change how I feel about you. Aww. You are a wonderful friend. You're just going to burn for eternity. You know, so at least I was nice enough to not shun people or disallow them from my stores.
Yeah. I think it's also really funny. We're kind of doing a 90 degree right now, but some of the people who are most adamantly about like personal freedom right now and individual liberty right now, don't seem to normally espouse that idea when it comes to like who people can marry or like what name they want to go by now if it's not the name that they were given by their parents or let's just think about when we hold any strong belief, what is the value that we ultimately espouse, and are we holding that value in all cases or just for ourselves?
These are the big questions.
These are the questions. Yeah.
I get up in front of a lot of audiences and of many different, socioeconomic levels and ideals on the proper way to live. And I will tell you, while it's very easy to turn off a very liberal audience, it is very hard to get a conservative audience back on your side.
Oh.
There are certain sacred cows that if you violate that, they will just be done with you. But, you know, every audience is different. And I love people. And, please come to my shows.
Yes. This goes back to the conversation where you never want an audience that's all the same type of people. So
never. Never. Do my best to make sure of that.
Yeah. All right, so I don't know that there's really like a big takeaway from this other than the fact that like Liberty University, I hope the spotlight being shined on you gives you an opportunity to reassess and course correct.
Or I hope the federal government asks for some of that money back.
Yeah.
Because that's my dollars.
Yeah.
And they were not doing it correctly. There's got to be something in the contract that says you can ask for that money back.
Lose future funding too as well.
That too.
Yeah.
That especially.
Because that's pretty much the only way you can influence giant organizations.
Yeah, I don't even care about influencing them. Just don't give them my money.
Yeah. Yeah. So that will take us to our final piece of fucking news, which is a delightful story.
A nice fun one.
It's fun. So I just want to give a shout out to Bruce Y. Lee, senior contributor at Forbes magazine in their healthcare department, who decided to make this article into his stand-up debut. The headline is great. Woman seeks $1 million from Geico after allegedly getting HPV from car sex. The story is exactly what it sounds like. And Bruce Y. Lee did a phenomenal job of not only peppering it with facts about HPV, which is a lot more than I expected, honestly, but also throwing in some zingers.
Hey, I think he took this as seriously as it needed to be taken. And shout out to you, Bruce Lee. You did it.
Yeah. I'm trying to find like some of his best ones. He's like, in this case, unprotected didn't mean without car insurance.
Yeah.
So apparently there's like two people that were banging, and they didn't exclusively bang in this car either, which is the best part of this.
which was what the counter argument was. It's like, you don't know when you got it. And it's just like, yeah, that alone should have precluded this from ever being even written about, but sure. Let's keep reading because it was a fun read.
Yeah. So like apparently this couple, they're only identified by initials, so we are gonna just make up names. So this pair were having sex, and apparently he knew he had HPV. he claims that he told her on three different occasions that he had been diagnosed with HPV positive throat cancer.
He said, "I'm out here." That's what he said. That's how he let her know. Do you have any diseases? You know, I'm out here. I'm in these streets.
And
I mean, I fuck.
Well, okay. So also, just to clarify, like HPV, super common. If you are a person who's had sex with another person, odds are good that you have HPV or have had it at some point, because like 75% of people will get it at some point. And there are lots of different types. And so like, it's not all the same thing. And yet this dude had throat cancer, and it is a significant concern, but a lot of HPV does not cause cancer. Some of them cause warts. Some of them just get cleared by your body and you never even know that you had it. But there are vaccines. Once again, this is a pro-vaccine podcast. You can get your HPV vaccines that will protect you.
Especially if, and the younger you get the vaccine, the better, which is why doctors suggest that teenagers be given the HPV vaccine so that they don't get some of the cancer-causing forms of the virus, you know.
Yeah, this is, we want children to not only know things before they need to, but also like be protected for things before they have to be. Like, so
right.
The idea is not that if you get the HPV vaccine as a kid that you'll suddenly then be like free for all, because there are other things.
Right. Because ain't nobody over here getting, you don't give a baby the DPT vaccine and then the baby just starts breathing. Actually, babies do like breathe and drool on people, so maybe it's good that they are inoculated from tuberculosis. So
yeah, that's good.
They're already going to be sticky. Yeah. They might as well not just be breathing disease on people.
Yeah, it's for the best. Yeah. So the woman in this case was diagnosed with anogenital HPV during a routine gynecology exam. Now here's when Bruce Wiley really comes into his own. Anogenital is a quick way of saying affecting your anus and your genitals when you may be in a hurry, such as at the supermarket checkout line, and don't have time for pauses and conjunctions. Bruce Wiley.
He's here all week, folks. He's here all week. Be sure to tip your waitress. See out here.
So then he goes on to talk about HPV infection of the anus and genitals and lesions and warts and stuff like that. And while car sex, this is another gem, while car sex can put you at a higher risk for getting a gear stuck in the rear, it's not clear how the act alone may have put you at a higher risk for HPV. So again, to go back into like, why is Geico involved in this?
Right.
Basically, like, she's suing him, and because he has insurance, I think basically
just going after the insurance company. Yeah,
it's just going after that money. So this is actually an agreement between the two of them for $5.2 million, but the agreement is limited to liability, and she can only get the award if at all only from Geico. And so Geico's like, we don't know anything about this agreement. And this is not a thing that we cover. Like, he didn't hit her with a car. Like,
right.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, yeah. The language in insurance contracts are very specific. And, you know, there's going to be a lawyer getting paid a lot of money to reread some contracts and be like, obviously, judge, just get the fuck out of here with this. And he's going to be like, all right, cool. And Geico's still going to have to come out of their pockets. So, you know, I'm not going to be over here simping for insurance companies, but this is just a good old fun piece of fucking news.
Yeah. So what we would like to say is, you know, because we are not the kind of comedians like Bruce Wiley is. We are the kind that are, you know, actually we are the kind of comedians that Bruce Wiley are, because your interest in informing people, you know, is on par, you know, because he's out here giving them the facts about protection.
He really did give the facts about it. The one thing that I would say, like, you don't have to do that, was just be like, well, you know, one way to not get it is just not have sex with that many people. It's like, well, you know, that's a little sex negative, but.
Yeah.
Not completely incorrect. obviously. Abstinence will preclude you from a wide variety of sexually transmitted infections, but we all know that abstinence-only education doesn't work. So it's not the most feasible way to limit your exposure.
It's also, abstinence is also, it's great. Assuming, a world where there's no things that happen that you didn't consent to, right? That's also true. A piece. And every choice that we make as a human is a risk. And when we talk about abstinence being like the way to prevent things from happening, or even just like monogamy and the assumption that that will keep you safe, it doesn't actually allow for us to really appreciate the fact that what makes life worth living is almost always dangerous. And like, if I wanted to be totally, totally safe, I would never leave my apartment, right? Because I could get hit by a car, struck by lightning. It's very likely I would get struck by a car. In fact, that's a very likely outcome, especially as a cyclist. But I want to live my life. And we don't have the same weird shaming messaging that like, if you don't want to get a cold or the flu, you should never interact with other people.
Right. What are you, shaking hands?
Yeah.
Whore.
We don't give that message. Instead, we have hopefully more practical advice. Like, you can get your flu shot, sneeze into your fucking sleeve, you weird grossozoid. Don't sneeze at me.
Wash your hands.
Washing your hands. Getting enough sleep, getting some vitamins in your body through food. Like, we have practical ways to address illness as living beings. And for some reason, when it comes to sex, we're like, but really, what you should have done is never interacted with other humans, which might be the most important thing for your mental health. But like, right. Fuck that.
Goes back to that shame and goes back to that whole religious thing. But, we were founded by the Puritans. And they left Europe because there was too much fucking going on.
Amazing. So if you get HPV, it's not the end of the world. If it's the kind that's cancer causing, it can be treated if you get regular screenings, right? So this is the importance of getting regular screenings. And
like the person in this article said, they got diagnosed with throat cancer 3 times. That means that was at least 2 times that he found out and went on with his life, just happily, eating pussy in cars.
Sounds like it, yeah.
This boy's hock toing on people, and he should probably not.
So if we take anything away from this, it's that I don't even know what to take away from this, but like, I guess use barrier methods with partners whose STI status you are not certain of. And that can mean condoms, that can mean dental dams, and, getting regular screenings for all sorts of different STIs, being sure that you ask for that specifically.
Yeah.
Because they won't necessarily automatically do it. And that includes asking specifically for things like herpes, too, because that requires a blood test. And then if you find out you have something, a lot of them, you can get treated. A lot of things, HIV at this point is something that people just live with. So as long as you stay on top of it, this is not the end of the world. So,
yes.
Yay. And if you're going to fuck in a car, then all that is doubled.
Very true. It just seems incredibly uncomfortable. I understand it's damn near a rite of passage for suburban people, but I'd rather just be... rather do it in a bathroom than a fucking car.
Wow, really?
Not in the shower. That's just a terrible excuse for what you think is going to be a good time, and you're just cold and you fucking twist your ankle from slipping. But just a car, like nothing about it. I mean, some fooling around in a car is cool, sure. A little heavy petting and whatnot. But actually, full-blown sex? Come on. What are we doing out here? Go inside.
Well, okay. Sure.
Outside. But there are better places.
Well, so this sort of brings to like why people are scared of people having cars initially is all the teens going and doing the sex, right? Because now they can get out of their parents' house. And if you don't have a place to go, if you can't like go rent a hotel room,
Sometimes. It in the park after dark.
Wow.
Just saying. Get on the jungle gyms. Use all four limbs. The thing is, the car's just uncomfortable. This is my personal opinion. This is.
Do you keep rhyming on purpose? Is this turning into a rap?
Is that what I did?
You did jungle gyms and all four limbs in the park after dark.
Oh, well.
Dropping bars.
I wasn't trying to rhyme. I just tend to do it all the time.
Okay.
Hey now. It's that damn hip hop anthology.
It has inspired us.
Shout out to African Bambaataa, who is a monster.
Right.
We could talk about that in a future episode, but he's been credibly accused of being an abuser.
Oh, all right. Well, whoa.
Tough.
All right. Well, that seems like we have done a lot for this episode already. We have covered a lot of ground.
Just some shrapnel at the end. Real fast.
Woo. All right, Darryl, where can people see you perform the comedies and bring out their heterogeneous group of friends to enjoy it?
Heterogeneous is a nice one. You can go to darrylcomedy.com. That's DarrylComedy. And see all my dates. See where I'll be. I got dates in a variety of states for a variety of types of performance. I do improv. I'm doing stand-up. I'm hosting shows. I'm closing shows. I'm a busy human being. So follow me on the internet if you want to hear just random thoughts from me. But, you know, also just follow my Google calendar if you want to know when I'll be live and in person.
I like it.
And, yeah, you can also get my album Black Gentrifier if you also want to hear not random thoughts, but a curated series of comedic interpretations of modern life.
It's good stuff. And then get the Black Gentrifier merch.
That's just also like, true.
Just like your hosts wear.
Yeah. Timmery, where can the people find you?
So I have a website that is Dr. Timmery. That's D-R, T-I-M-A-R-E-E, Dr. Timmery. And it is a repository not only for links, like the stories that we talked about today will definitely be on there, but also my upcoming events. We've got a bunch of really interesting stuff coming up soon, including Get You a Babe Who Can Do Both, the show that combines lightning talks and burlesque. So strippers give a TED talk and then perform a burlesque act. We are going to have a date in December at the National Liberty Museum as part of First Fridays. And then we're going to have a show in January at Frankie Bradley's, totally different cast. So completely different shows, totally different talks, different performers. We also have another episode of Safe Word coming up at Frankie Bradley's in December, and that is an all kink burlesque show. So if you are interested in seeing, oh my God, this one's going to be good. We've got Vanka and Qualms Galore, who are both going to be in the cast. I know there's going to be some goddess worship, some, a little bit of like electro stim. There's going to be some rope bondage. So if those things are of interest, all of those dates will be, I'll list them on my social medias. And also, again, everything's at Dr. Timmery. That's D-R Timmery, T-I-M-E-R-E. And yeah, and at some point, we're going to have DTF back in the venues. It's going to be back in real life. Yeah.
Yeah, so, we've already secured some 2022 things. You know, more information as it becomes available.
Yeah. So thank you, everybody, for supporting us for however long you have, for listening to this episode.
Yeah.
Thank you to our producer and editor, Flirt Vonnegut. We will talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
What? And you ain't hanging with the team if you ain't down to fuck.